Those flesh-embedded receptors should not be used as alarm clocks. It's too rough a way to wake a man. They were in the same conference room. Martinez, Rexton, a couple of his high brass, and the old man. The president came in, wearing a bathrobe and followed by Mary, just as I arrived. Martinez started to speak, but the old man cut in. "Let's see your back, Tom." The president looked surprised, and Mary signaled that everything was okay. But the old man chose not to see her. "I mean it," he persisted. The president said quietly, "Perfectly correct, Andrew," and slipped his robe off his shoulders. His back was clean. "If I don't set an example, how can I expect others to cooperate?" The old man started to help him back into the robe, but the president shrugged him off and hung it over a chair. "I'll just have to acquire new habits. Difficult at my age." "Well, gentlemen?" I thought myself that bare skin would take getting used to. We made an odd group. Martinez was lean and tanned, carved smooth from mahogany. I judge he was part Indian. Rexton had a burned-in, high-altitude tan on his face, but from his collar line down, he was as white as the president. On his chest was a black cross of hair, armpit to armpit, and chin to belly, while the president and the old man were covered front and back with grizzled, wiry fur. The old man's mat was so thick that mice could have nested in it. Mary looked like a publicity pick. Low-angle shot to bring out the legs and careful posing, that sort. Me, well, I'm the spiritual type. Martinez and Rexton had been shoving pushpins into a map. Red for bad, green for good, and a few amber ones. Reports were still coming, and Rexton's assistants kept adding new pins. Iowa looked like measles. New Orleans and the Tetchy Country were as bad. So was Kansas City. The upper end of the Missouri-Mississippi system, from Minneapolis and St. Paul down to St. Louis, was clearly enemy territory. There were fewer red pins from there down to New Orleans, but there were no green ones. There was another hot spot around El Paso, and two on the East Coast. The president looked it over calmly. "We shall need the help of Canada and Mexico," he said. "Any reports?"
"None that mean anything, sir."
"Canada and Mexico," the old man said seriously, "will be just a start. You are going to need the whole world with you on this job." Rexton said,
"We will, eh? How about Russia?"
Nobody had an answer to that one. Nobody ever does. Too big to occupy, and too big to ignore, World War III had not settled the Russian problem, and no war ever would. The parasites might feel right at home behind the curtain. The president said, "We'll deal with that when we come to it." He drew a finger across the map. "Any trouble getting messages through to the coast?"
"Apparently not, sir," Rexton told him. "They don't seem to interfere with straight-through relay. But all military communications I have shifted to one-link relay through the space stations."
He glanced at his watch finger. "Space Station Gamma at the moment."
"Hmm," said the president. "Andrew, could these things storm a space station?"
"How would I know?" the old man answered testily. "I don't know whether their ships are built for it or not. More probably, they would do it by infiltration, through the supply rockets." There was discussion as to whether or not the space stations could already have been taken over. Schedule bareback did not apply to the stations. Although we had built them and paid for them, since they were technically United Nations territory, the president had to wait until the United Nations acted on the entire matter.
"Don't worry about it," Rexton said suddenly.
"Why not?" the president asked.
I'm probably the only one here who has done duty in a space station. Gentlemen, the costume we are now wearing is customary in a station. A man fully dressed would stand out like an overcoat on the beach. But we'll see. He gave orders to one of his assistants. The president resumed studying the map. So far as we know, he said, pointing to Grinnell, Iowa, all this derives from a single landing, here. The old man answered, yes, as far as we know. I said, oh no. They all looked at me and I was embarrassed. Go ahead, said the president. There were at least three more landings. I know there were, before I was rescued. The old man looked dumbfounded. Are you sure, son? We thought we wrung you dry. Of course I'm sure. Why didn't you mention it? I never thought of it before. I try to explain how it feels to be possessed. How you know what is going on, but everything seems dreamy. Equally important and equally unimportant. I grew quite upset. I am not the jittery type, but being ridden by a master does something to you. The old man put his hand on me and said, steady down, son. The president said something soothing and gave me a reassuring smile. That stereocast personality of his is not put on. He's really got it. Rexton said, the important point is, where did they land? We might still capture one. I doubt it, the old man answered. They did a cover-up on the first one in a matter of hours. If it was the first one, he added thoughtfully. I went to the map and tried to think. Sweating, I pointed to New Orleans. I'm pretty sure one was about here. I stared at the map. I don't know where the others landed, but I know they did. How about here? Rexton asked, pointing to the east coast. I don't know. I don't know. The old man pointed to the other east coast danger spot. We know this one is a secondary infection. He was kind enough not to say that I had been the means of infecting it. Can't you remember anything else? Martinez said testily. Think, man. I just don't know. We never knew what they were up to, not really. I thought until my skull ached, then pointed to Kansas City. I sent several messages here, but I don't know whether there were shipment orders or not. Rexton looked at the map. Around Kansas City was almost as pin-studded as Iowa. We'll assume a landing near Kansas City, too. The technical boys can do a problem on it. It may be subject to logistic analysis. We might derive the other landing. Or landings, added the old man. Huh? Or landings, certainly. But we need more reports. He turned back to the map and stared at it thoughtfully. Hindsight is confoundingly futile. At the moment the first saucer landed, the menace could have been stamped out by one determined man and a bomb. At the time, the Kavanaughs, Mary, the old man, and I, reconnoitered around Grinnell and in Des Moines, we three alone might have killed every slug, had we been ruthless and, more important, known where they all were. Had scheduled bareback been ordered during the fortnight after the first landing, it alone might have turned the trick. But by the next day it was clear that scheduled bareback had failed as an offensive measure. As a defense, it was useful. The uncontaminated areas could be kept so, so long as the slugs could not conceal themselves. It even had mild success in offense. Areas contaminated but not secured by the parasites were cleaned up at once. Washington itself, for example, and New Philadelphia. New Brooklyn, too. There, I had been able to give specific advice. The entire East Coast turned from red to green. But as the area down the middle of the country filled in on the map, it filled in red, and stayed so. The infected areas stood out in ruby light now, for the simple wall map studded with pushpins had been replaced by a huge electronic military map. 10 miles to the inch, covering one wall of the conference room. It was a repeater map, the master being located down in the sublevels of the new Pentagon. The country was split in two, as if a giant had washed red pigment down the central valley. Two zigzag amber paths bordered the great band held by the slugs. These were overlap, the only areas of real activity, the places where line-of-sight reception was possible from both stations held by the enemy and from stations still in the hands of free men. One such started near Minneapolis, swung west of Chicago and east of St. Louis, then meandered through Tennessee and Alabama to the Gulf. The other cut a wide path through the Great Plains and came out near Corpus Christi. El Paso was the center of a ruby area, as yet unconnected with the main body. I looked at the map and wondered what was going on in those border strips. I had the room to myself. The cabinet was meeting, and the president had taken the old man with him. Rexton and his brass had left earlier. I stayed there because I had not been told where to go, and I hesitated to wander around in the White House. So I stayed and fretted and watched amber lights blink red, and much less frequently, red lights blink amber or green. I wondered how an overnight visitor with no status managed to get breakfast. I had been up since 4, and my total nourishment so far had been one cup of coffee, served by the president's valet. Even more urgently, I wanted to find a washroom. I knew where the president's washroom was, but I did not have the nerve to use it, feeling vaguely that to do so would be somewhere between high treason and disorderly conduct. There was not a guard in sight. Probably the room was being scanned from abroad somewhere. I suppose every room in the White House has an eye and ear in it. But there was no one physically in view. At last I got desperate enough to start trying doors. The first two were locked. The third was what I was looking for. It was not marked sacred to the chief, nor did it appear to be booby-trapped. So I used it. When I came back into the conference room, Mary was there. I looked at her stupidly for a moment. "I thought you were with the president." She smiled. "I was, but I got chased out. The old man took over for me." I said, "Say, Mary, I've been wanting to talk with you, and this is the first chance I've had. I guess I, well, anyway, I shouldn't have. I mean, according to the old man..." I stopped, my carefully rehearsed speech in ruins. "Anyhow, I shouldn't have said what I did," I concluded miserably. She put a hand on my arm. Sam, my very dear, do not be troubled. What you said and what you did was fair enough from what you knew. The important thing to me is what you did for me. The rest does not matter, except that I am happy again to know that you don't despise me." "Well, but..." "Damn it, don't be so noble. I can't stand it." She gave me a merry, lively smile, not at all like the gentle one with which she had greeted me. "Sam, I think you like your women to be a little bit bitchy. I warn you, I can be so," she went on. You were still worried about that slap, too, I think.
All right. I'll pay it back.
She reached up and patted me gently on the cheek. Once.
There. It's paid back, and you can forget it.
Her expression changed suddenly. She swung on me, and I thought the top of my head was coming off.
And that, she said in a tense, hoarse whisper, pays you back. The one I got from your girlfriend.
My ears were ringing and my eyes did not want to focus. If I had not seen her bare palm, I would have sworn that she had used at least a 2x4. She looked at me, wary and defiant, not the least apologetic. Angry, rather, if dilated nostrils meant anything. I raised my hand, and she tensed. But I just wanted to touch my stinging cheek. It was very sore.
She's not my girlfriend, I said, lamely.
We eyed each other, and simultaneously burst out laughing. She put her hands on my shoulders, and let her head collapse on my right one, still laughing.
Sam, she managed to say.
I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done it. Not to you, Sam. At least I shouldn't have slapped you so hard.
The devil you're sorry, I growled.
But you shouldn't have put English on it. You damn near took the hide off.
Poor Sam.
She reached up and touched it.
It hurt.
She's really not your girlfriend?
No. Worse luck. But not from lack of my trying.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Who is your girlfriend, Sam?
The words seemed coquettish. She did not make them so.
You are, you vixen.
Yes, she said comfortably. I am. If you'll have me. I told you that before, and I meant it. Bought and paid for. She was waiting to be kissed. I pushed her away.
Confound it, woman. I don't want you bought and paid for.
It did not faze her. I put it badly. Paid for, but not bought. I'm here because I want to be here. Now will you kiss me, please? So help me. Up to that moment, she had not turned on the sex.
Not really.
When she saw that the answer was yes, she did so, and it was like summer sun coming out from a cloud.
That is inadequate, but it will have to do.
She had kissed me once before. This time, she kissed me. The French are smart. They have two words for it. This was the other one. I felt myself sinking into a warm golden haze. And I did not ever want to come up. Finally, I had to break and gasped,
I think I'll sit down for a minute.
She said, Thank you, Sam, and let me. Mary, I said presently, Mary, my dear, there is something you possibly could do for me.
Yes, she said, eagerly.
Tell me how in the name of Ned a person gets anything to eat around here. I'm starved. No breakfast. She looked startled. I suppose she had expected something else. But she answered,
Why, certainly.
I do not know where she went, nor how she did it. She may have butted into the White House pantry and helped herself. But she returned in a few minutes with a tray of sandwiches and 2 bottles of beer. Corned beef and rye. Put the roses back in my cheeks. I was cleaning up my third when I said, Mary, how long do you figure that meeting will last?
Let me see, she answered.
14 people, including the old man. I give it a minimum of 2 hours. Why?
In that case, I said, swallowing the last bite,
we have time to duck out of here. find a registry office, get married, and get back before the old man misses us. She did not answer, and she did not look at me. Instead, she stared at the bubbles in her beer. Well, I insisted. She raised her eyes. I'll do it if you say so. I'm not Welshing, but I'm not going to start out by lying to you. I would rather we didn't. You don't want to marry me? Sam, I don't think you are ready to get married. Speak for yourself. Don't be angry, my dear. I'm not holding out, honest. You can have me with or without a contract, anywhere, any when, any way. But you don't know me yet. Get acquainted with me. You might change your mind. I'm not in the habit of changing my mind. She glanced up without answering, then looked away sadly. I felt my face get hot. That was a very special circumstance, I protested. It could not happen to us again in 100 years. That wasn't really me talking. It was... She stopped me. I know, Sam. And now you want to prove to me that it didn't really happen. Or at least, that you are sure of your own mind now. But you don't have to prove anything. I won't run out on you. And I don't mistrust you. Take me away on a weekend. Better yet, move into my apartment. If you find that I wear well, there's always time to make me what great-grandmother called an honest woman. Heaven knows why. I must have looked sullen. I felt so. She put a hand on mine and said seriously, "Take a look at the map, Sam." I turned my head and looked. Red as ever, or more so. It seemed to me that the danger zone around El Paso had increased. She went on. "Let's get this mess cleaned up first, dear. Then, if you still want to, ask me again. In the meantime, you can have the privileges without the responsibilities." What could be fairer than that? The only trouble was that it was not the way I wanted it. Why will a man who has been avoiding marriage like the plague suddenly decide that nothing less will suit him? I had seen it happen 100 times and never understood it. Now, I was doing it myself. Mary had to go back on duty as soon as the meeting was over. The old man collared me and took me for a walk. Yes, a walk, though we went only as far as the Baruch Memorial Bench. There he sat down, fiddled with his pipe, and stared into space. The day was as muggy as only Washington can get, but the park was almost deserted. People were not yet used to schedule bareback. He said, "Schedule counterblast starts at midnight." I said nothing. Questioning him was useless. Presently he added, "We swoop down on every relay station, broadcast station, newspaper office, and Western Union office in Zone Red." "Sounds good," I answered. "How many men does it take?" He did not answer. Instead, he said, "I don't like it. I don't like it a little bit." "Huh? See here, Bob. The president went on the channels and told everybody to peel off their shirts. We find that the message did not get through into infected territory. What's the next logical development?" I shrugged. "Schedule counterblast, I suppose?" "That hasn't happened yet. Think. It has been more than 24 hours. What should have happened or hasn't?" "Should I know?" "You should, if you are ever going to amount to anything on your own. Here." He handed me a combo key. "Scoot out to Kansas City and take a look-see. Stay away from comm stations, cops, and... shucks. You know their attack points better than I do. Stay away from them. Take a look at anything else. And don't get caught.
He looked at his finger and added, Be back here a half hour before midnight or sooner. Get going.
A lot of time you allow me to case a whole city, I complained. It will take nearly 3 hours just to drive to Kansas City.
More than 3 hours, he answered. Don't attract attention by picking up a ticket.
You know darn well I'm a careful driver.
Move.
So I moved, stopping by the White House to pick up my kit. I wasted 10 minutes convincing a new guard that I really had been there overnight, and actually had possessions to pick up. The combo was to the car we had come down in. I picked it up at Rock Creek Park platform. Traffic was light, and I commented on it to the dispatcher as I handed in the combo.
Freight and commercial carriers are grounded, he answered. The emergency. You got a military clearance?
I knew I could get one by phoning the old man, but bothering him about minutia does not endear one to him. I said, Check the number. He shrugged and slipped the combo into his machine. My hunch had been right. His eyebrows shot up and he handed it back.
How you rate? He commented.
You must be the president's fair-haired boy.
He did not ask for my destination, and I did not offer it.
His machine probably broke into Hail Columbia when the old man's number hit it.
Once launched, I set the controls for Kansas City at legal max and tried to think. The transponder beeped as radar beams hit it each time I slid from one control block into the next. But no faces appeared on the screen. Apparently the old man's combo was good for the route, emergency or not. I began to wonder what would happen when I slipped over into the red areas, and then realized what he had been driving at when he talked about the next logical development. Would the control net pass me on through into areas we knew darn well were infested by Titans? One tends to think of communications as meaning the line-of-sight channels and nothing else. But communications means all traffic, of every sort. Even dear old Auntie Mame, heading for California with her head stuffed with gossip. The slugs had seized the channels, and the president's proclamation had not gotten through, or so we had assumed. But news can't be stopped that easily. Such measures merely slow it down. Behind the Soviet curtain, Aunt Soya does not go on long trips. It ain't healthy. Ergo, if the slugs expected to retain control where they were, seizing the channels would be just their first step. It stood to reason that they were not numerous enough to interfere with all traffic. But what would they do? I reached only the unhelpful conclusion that they would do something that I, being a part of communications by definition, had better be prepared for evasive action, if I wanted to save my pretty pink skin. In the meantime, the Mississippi River and Zone Red were sliding closer by the minute. I wondered what would happen the first time my recognition signal was picked up by a station controlled by Masters. I tried to think like a Titan. Impossible, I found, even though I had been a slave to one. The idea revolted me. Well then, what would a security commissar do if an unfriendly craft flew past the curtain? Have it shot down, of course. No, that was not the answer. It was probably safe in the air. But I had better not let them spot me landing. Elementary. Elementary, in the face of a traffic control net, which was described proudly as the No Sparrow Shall Fall plan. They boasted that a butterfly could not make a forced landing anywhere in the United States without alerting the search and rescue system. Not quite true, but I was no butterfly.
What I wanted was to land short of an infested area and go in on the ground. On foot, I will make a stab at penetrating any security screen, mechanical, electronic, manned, or mixed. But how can you use misdirection in a car making westing a full degree every 7 minutes? Or hang a stupid, innocent look on the nose of a duo? If I went in on foot, the old man would get his report come next Michaelmas. He wanted it before midnight. Once, in a rare mellow mood, the old man told me that he did not bother his agents with detailed instructions. He gave a man a mission. Let him sink or swim. I suggested that his method might use up a lot of agents. Some, he had admitted, but not as many as the other way. I believe in the individual, and I try to pick individuals who are survivor types. And how in the hell, I had asked him, do you know when you've got a survivor type? He had grinned at me wickedly. A survivor type is an agent who comes back. Then I know. I had to reach a decision in the next few minutes. Elihu, I said to myself, you are about to find out which type you are. And damn his icy heart. My course would take me toward St. Louis, swinging me in the city loop around St. Louis and on to Kansas City. But St. Louis was in zone red. The military situation map had shown Chicago as still green. As I remembered it, the amber line had zigzagged west, somewhere above Hannibal, Missouri. And I wanted very badly to cross the Mississippi while still in zone green. A car crossing that mile-wide river would make a radar blip as sharp as a desert star. I signaled block control for permission to descend a local traffic level, then did so without waiting, resuming manual control and cutting my speed. I headed north. Short of the Springfield Loop, I headed west again, staying low. When I reached the river, I crossed slowly, close to the water, with my transponder shut down. Sure, you can't shut off your radar recognition signal in the air. Not in the standard rig. But the section's cars were not standard. The old man was not above using gangster tricks. I had hopes, if local traffic were being monitored while I crossed, that my blip would be mistaken for a boat on the river. I did not know, certainly, whether the next block station across the river was zone red or zone green. But, if my memory was correct, it should be green. I was about to cut in the transponder again, on the assumption that it would be safer, or at least less conspicuous, to get back into the traffic system, when I noticed the shoreline opening up ahead of me. The map did not show a tributary there. I judged it to be an inlet, or possibly a new channel cut in the spring floods, and not yet mapped. I dropped almost to water level and headed into it. The stream was narrow, meandering, and almost overhung by trees, and I had no more business taking a sky car into it than a bee has of flying down a trombone. But it afforded perfect radar shadow. I could get lost in it. In a few minutes I was lost, not only from any monitoring technician, but lost myself right off the map. I switched channels and turned and cut back, and I was so busy bucking the car by hand, trying to keep from crashing, that I lost all track of navigation. I swore and wished that the car was a trifib so that I could land on water. The tree suddenly broke on the left bank. I saw a stretch of level land, kicked her over, and squatted her in with a deceleration that nearly cut me in two against my safety belt. But I was down, and no longer trying to play catfish in a muddy stream. I wondered what to do. There seemed to be nobody around. I judged that I was on the back end of someone's farm. No doubt there was a highway close by. I'd better find it and stay on the ground. but I knew that was silly, even as I thought it. 3 hours from Washington to Kansas City by air. I had completed almost all the trip, and now I was how far away from Kansas City? By land, about 3 hours. At that rate, all I needed to make the trip complete was to park the car 10 or 12 miles outside Kansas City and walk. Then I would still have 3 hours to go. I felt like the frog who jumped halfway to the end of the log with each hop, but never got there. I must get back into the air. But I dare not do so until I knew positively whether traffic here was being controlled by free men or by slugs. It suddenly occurred to me that I had not turned on the stereo since leaving Washington. I'm not much for stereo. Between the commercials and the junk they sandwich between them, I sometimes wonder about progress. But a newscast may have uses. I could not find a newscast. I got a lecture by Myrtle Dulighty, Ph.D., on Why Husbands Grow Bored, sponsored by the Euthogen Hormone Company. I decided that she probably had plenty of experience in her subject. B. A trio of girl hipsters singing, If You Mean What I Think You Mean, What Are We Waiting For? C. An episode in Lucretia Learns About Life. Dear Dr. Myrtle was fully dressed and could have hidden half a dozen titans around her frame. The trio were dressed about the way one would expect them to be, but they did not turn their backs to the camera. Lucretia appeared to alternate having her clothes torn off with taking them off willingly, but the camera always cut, or the lights always went out just before I could check on whether or not her back was bare. Of slugs, that is. And none of it meant anything. Those programs could have been taped weeks or months before the president announced schedule bareback. I was still switching channels, trying to find a newscast or any live program, when I found myself staring into the professionally unctuous smile of an announcer. He was fully dressed. Shortly I realized it was one of those silly giveaway shows. He was saying, And some lucky little woman sitting by her screen right this minute is about to receive absolutely free the General Atomics 6-in-1 Automatic Home Butler. Who will it be? You? You? Or lucky you? He turned away from scan. I could see his shoulders. They were covered by shirt and jacket, and distinctly round, almost humped. I was inside Zone Red. When I switched off, I realized that I was being watched by a male urchin about 9 years old. He was wearing nothing but shorts, but the brown of his shoulders showed that such was his custom. I threw back the windscreen. Hey, bub, where's the highway? He continued to stare before replying. Road to Macon's up there yonder. Say, mister, that's a Cadillac zipper, ain't it? Sure thing. Where yonder? Give me a ride, huh? Will you? Haven't got time. Where's the road? He sized me up before answering. Take me along, and I'll show you. I gave in. He climbed in and looked around. I opened my kit, got out shirt, trousers, and jacket, and put them on. I said conversationally, Maybe I shouldn't put on this shirt. Do people around here wear shirts? He scowled. I've got shirts. I didn't say you didn't. I just asked if people around here wore shirts. Of course I do. Where do you think you are, mister? Arkansas? I gave up and asked again about the road. He said, Can I punch the button when we take off, huh? I explained that we were going to stay on the ground. He was frankly annoyed, but condescended to point out a direction. I drove cautiously as the car was heavy for unpaved countryside. Presently he told me to turn. Quite a bit later, I stopped the car and said, Are you going to show me where that road is, or am I going to wallop your backsides?
He opened the door and slid out. Hey, I yelled.
He looked back.
Over that way, he admitted.
I turned the car, not really expecting to find a highway.
But finding one, nevertheless, only 50 yards away.
The brat had caused me to drive around three sides of a large square.
If you could call it a highway. There was not an ounce of rubber in the paving.
Still, it was a road. I followed it to the west. All in all, I had wasted more than an hour.
Macon, Missouri seemed normal, much too normal to be reassuring, as scheduled bareback obviously had not been heard of there.
There were a number of barebacks, but it was a hot day. There were more backs that were covered, and any of them might have concealed a slug. I gave serious thought to checking this town, rather than Kansas City, then beating back the way I'd come, while I could.
Pushing further into country which I knew to be controlled by the masters made me as nervous as a preacher at a stag party. I wanted to run. But the old man had said Kansas City. He would take a dim view of a substitute.